This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive. KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valensky.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And this evening we have something special coming up right at the top of the hour. But first, right after that, we have News Wrap from This Way Out. And in tonight's wrap-up of the news, a queer inclusive hate crimes bill passes the U.S. House with Senate approval expected very soon, while President Barack Obama appoints openly gay lawyer David Huebner as U.S. ambassador to New Zealand and Samoa. And, of course, there's more from around the world. At 9:40, the National Equality March was held this past weekend in Washington, D.C. Each congressional district had an action team mobilized to go to Washington, D.C., and our very own Brian Levinka went to Washington, and we'll hear his impressions of the event, and he's going to show us the pictures, too, on radio. Right. At the top of the hour at 10 o'clock, Jackie Ware, the volunteer coordinator for the Harris County Hospital District, will be here to talk about the Thomas Street Clinic. Did you know that it is the largest freestanding HIV indigent care clinic in the nation? And then at 10:22, BioCity Performing Arts, Catherine Del Paglio, Executive Director, and Linus Lerner, Artistic Director, will be here to talk about the BCPA's 31st year of performing in Houston. And then finally on the program tonight at 10:40, we'll have our feature segments from This Way Out. But before we do that, we're going to have some discussion and then our special guest.
Well, last weekend was a rather interesting weekend. There was a number of things going on besides the march that happened in Washington that we're going to be talking about for a little while. Here in Houston, the caucus had a day on Saturday where they did try to get people out to volunteer and get ready for the election. Pride had their annual coming out day. I didn't go to it, so I don't know what happened. On Sunday, the caucus had their brunch. And then
gospel brunch.
RMCC was. Were you there?
Yes, I was. So, I spoke at that event. I was there with Ray Hilt. He and I shared the stage along with several other groups. And not that he and I are a group, but yes, we're going to do a two-woman show. But it was very good. It was in honor and of the march as well as the day of coming out.
Did they play the? Were they able to play the video of the march?
Yes, they did.
And that, you know, I got to give C-SPAN a lot of credit that they cover these events, and I can't say enough bad stuff about Logo, who went dark yesterday. They're supposed to be our network of what's going on in the community. First of all, they canceled their news segments, and now, you know, they're all about entertainment and nothing about the, you know, actual stuff that's going
there
on.
There needs to be some news programs on there. Some yes. Really
did
hard.
Y'all, did y'all
they need queer voices on right. TV.
Did y'all see me on the C-SPAN?
No.
I was the gay one.
You were the gay one?
Yes.
You were the...
Okay. Were you the
which
young one?
One
too?
I was the gay one. I had a Texas flag, so I was kind of representing our state.
I saw a picture here. I'm going to show everybody on the radio the
yes,
picture.
There's a picture of me. No, I'm just kidding.
And also, last night was the Decadent Desserts.
Yes. Yes,
there was just a big old gay weekend in Houston, and I guess across the nation, too.
You know, and it's just a shame we don't have a device that, you know, keeps all this calendar stuff to let people know about it.
I think we are... Queer Voices is the device. We just have to get it out
we
there
have
and
to
do it.
You out there in the audience need to let us know. You need to contact us. Let us know what's going on so we can let everyone else know.
Can I do a thank you to our listeners?
And by the way, Brian has this nice rosy glow. I guess you got some sun.
I did get I was at the march yesterday, and it was very perfect weather. But we'll talk about that later in the later time.
In the upcoming weeks, we're going to be raising funds for KPFT, which desperately needs funds to keep us going. But first, we got a special piece that JD did for us, don't we?
Into a nation. showed you and burned you. They beat you and they tied you. They left you cold and breathing. For love they crucified you. I can't forget the hard as I try. This silhouette against the sky.
If you go to the website queermusicheritage.us, that's where J.D. Doyle has his stuff, and he's got a whole page full of music there that's dedicated to Matthew Shepard. This is Queer Voices.
You know, I'm sort of getting tired of seeing this Ray Hill win all these awards. You're an Outsmart is the greatest.
I have a good friend, Jack, that explained that to me. He said, it's all name recognition. They don't even know what any of us do. And it's all name. And I took his word for it. I believe that. It's all name recognition.
Brian got something
And of course, how I advertise is I leave my telephone number on men's rooms walls all over town. And what's really a prize is when I die, who's going to get that telephone number? Because I know where all the good locations are.
Yes. Yes. Well, but you're also the person that takes those calls when people get in trouble.
I was explaining to GLBT group down at Clear Lake, and I want to thank them for their listening in tonight, and I want to thank them for inviting me down there to speak. But I defined an activist for them. An activist is someone who answers the telephone. And so a telephone goes with me everywhere. I now have cordless phones, so I can take them with me when I go to the bathroom, take a shower, and all that. But I used to have have a cord on it long enough so I could move it around the house.
Well, that's the way it used to be.
That's the way it used to be. I mean, just the reality of your life. You had to have a long cord on your telephone. And, of course, my telephone number came from Fred Pies, and so did the long cord. So I just moved it around. And an activist is one who answers the telephone, listens carefully to the voice on the other end, helps those he or she can, and comforts those we can't. That's the definition of an activist.
I like that. Yeah. Well, that's very good.
Well, the reason we have you on, which we do about every so often, is just sort of give us a talk about the community. With National March yesterday.
Yeah. Big doing.
Talked about all the events that happened over the weekend, and we have this incredible election coming up. And what's your gauge on what's going on?
Okay, well, the march yesterday, that report.
And we're going to, and Brian was there, we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Well, Brian said that he was there and showed me some eye level picture, and I've seen other eye level pictures. It was a nice crowd. Until you have seen a million people there, like there was in, 94. And again, in 2000, then a couple hundred thousand people is like more queers than you've ever seen in one pile. And I had some problems with the organization of this march and the method who came around. And I don't like these personality calling marches. I like grassroots conferences and the small d democratic process to make these opinions. But if you actually go, you don't know what has gone on before. You have no idea what's going on, the cat fights going on behind the podium. If you go, you get to see all of those wonderful people. And I'll guarantee you, whatever you think is a good-looking gay, lesbian, or transgendered person, you would have seen that on the mall yesterday in large supply.
I missed my opportunity.
Right, again.
Again.
Whenever we gather in crowds like that, our diversity comes out, the richness of our background and our history comes out. And I'm a real believer in marches, but I don't suffer any illusions. That Barney Frank was not telling the truth. He said what we put pressure on was the grass. Because we don't really march for them. Marches are for us. It's to reinforce our own spirit. It's to recharge our own batteries. It's to build up our own confidence. Because the work is not one event, one day, somewhere across the country. The work is getting up in the morning, living a good and decent life in hopes that everybody in your neighborhood notices, and role modeling for the kids who are too afraid to come out of the closet, at least they become homeless and desperate or get hurt.
And I understand there was just tons and tons of young people there.
Oh, yes. Last year at National Coming Out Day, my address was at Bel Air High School. I went to Bel Air High School, to the Gay and Straight Coalition of Bel Air High School. And during the 30-minute lunch, you know, we give you 30 minutes to eat at lunch? During the 30-minute lunch break at Bel Air High School, the kids in the organization had brought in sandwiches and chips and cans of soft drinks. And that was my audience. And I had to give a coming out day speech in 30 minutes. And I can actually do that. Jack doesn't think I can.
No. What I was going to comment on is New York Times a few weeks ago did a cover story on their magazine about coming out in middle school.
Yeah.
The story was based around Oklahoma. And
I read that. That was an amazing story. It was long.
2 weeks we're going to be interviewing Joe Wilson, who has done the film. I forget the name of the film, but it's about rural towns in Pennsylvania. It's the Queer Fest film that's going to be there that following Wednesday. So we'll have him live on the air here via phone.
Yeah, Queer Fest coming up. Can't miss that.
Yes. Unfortunately, it's only going to be one film this year, but hopefully it will sort of
get regroup
back
and get back together.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now you have perfectly straight kids going home and telling their parents they're gay, lesbian, or transgender to upset their parents. And then they wake up the next morning and say, well, I don't know how to do this. I'd never thought about that part.
Well, they can call a friend now since they're out. If anybody doubts who we're talking to Ray Hill.
But the next thing in line for Houstonians, of course, is the upcoming election. And if you rush over here and joined us after watching part of the mayoral debate, let me tell you something. I'm going to omit names from this whole thing for a reason, because if we plug a specific candidate, then we've got KPFT and Pacifica still follow the fairness rules.
That's right.
So I'm not using any names, but whenever I say our candidate, you can figure out who that is on your own. Our candidate is unquestionably the outstanding candidate in the race. Our candidate is the smartest candidate. Our candidate is the candidate with most experience. Our candidate is a candidate who has put together a political campaign organization. And you will hear that our candidate doesn't have great bags of money to throw on the truck and go out and cause war. And I just assume the other two leading candidates in the race beat one another with large bags of money while our candidate turns out the best vote. Having campaign organization in every precinct in Houston is no small potatoes.
No, it's not.
It is enormous. And so I want to challenge the listeners of this program. If you don't know who to vote for, then the first thing you do is you go to this wonderful website called The Caucus.
The
gay and lesbian transgendered community have met and following a rigid democratic, small d, democratic process, fought, argued, debated, explored in an endorsement process that is second to none in this city.
It's well respected by many organizations around the country.
Any politician worth their salt in Houston knows when they've gone through a process, they have been through a process, and they will rise or fall based on the vote of a democratic group of people. And we argue. I mean, I floor fought for candidates that did not get endorsed.
That's right.
And I will follow the entire endorsement card.
It's important for the community that the endorsement card,
because
that's our strength.
Yes, the measure of our strength, what other people think about our strength, what the pundits at Rice University and University of Houston, St. Thomas, whenever they scratch their head and study the results, they're not going to measure our results in the mayor's race. They're going to measure our results in the race of the candidate of ours that gets the least number of votes. That's where our strength is going to be measured. So it's very important that if you vote the entire slate. That's easy in city elections because there's only 16 elections. You can't miss it. And you're not going to get to vote for them all. You only get to vote for one of nine district candidates. So you've got five, six, seven candidates to vote for and a couple of referendums.
Well, unless your district
school board, because the caucus did endorse some school boards.
So
you get the information, you make multiple copies of it, and you go vote first day. First day of early voting is the 20th.
Mm-hmm. A week from today.
You go down and you vote that day. And then you keep the card that you voted from. You can keep your copy, and you keep the other copies that you got made that you had made off the internet. And then you look around your neighborhood. You look around your workplace. You look around school where you go to class, and you find people and say, look, I would like to take you to the polls. You know, we'll stop and get a cup of coffee or
a soft drink or something. Don't drink before you go vote. That never works out real well. But you can do all of these other things. Go drink later if you want to. But the deal is that you take somebody to the polls, and while they're in line to vote, and if you want to have a lot of time, take them to this West Gray location, because there's long lines there all the time. And so you go over there to vote.
I don't think the lines are going to be there this year.
Well, I don't know, Jack. You're out there getting your head all sunburnt and peeling, and I don't know. I really hope this election is over at the end of early voting. I really hope it is. I hope everybody goes well, and I hope there are lines. But if you go to West Gray, you get to see Jack. There's Jack out there.
Well, I got a day job now, so I'm not going to be there quite as much.
Yeah. But you'll be there a lot.
I'll be there. Yeah. Yes.
Be there a lot. You're off hours. You can go out there and push cards. Then Jack is an icon. But the other people that are bringing their friends there, they can stay out in the parking lot. And talk to people as they're coming to vote. Say, have you considered this race? There's nothing wrong with asking somebody to vote for a candidate.
No, it's important that you do, because you influence your friends, the people you know.
They may be there to vote for their district council member and really quite open-minded about who's running for mayor and who's running for the at-large position.
That's right.
There's any number of combinations you can play, and you can only ask people to vote. And if you've got other people to help you do that, don't badger people or annoy them. Smile at them. Ask them to vote. Said, you know, please consider. Or you can pass out a card. And you have a lot of people that come to vote and ask for the GLBT card, ask for the caucus card, even though they've never been to a caucus meeting and don't care, because they know the process is good.
That's right.
So that's how we multiply our vote. And we've always been able to double or triple or quadruple our vote, depending upon the enthusiasm you have.
Well, do you think the enthusiasm's out there in the community this time?
Well, I don't think there's much interest in the election in any of the communities out there. Well, how does that prove in the aggregate? It means that every person listening to Queer Voices right now's vote and participation is multiplied by 10, because there's a lot of people on the snooze.
That's right.
There are enough people listening to this program right now to elect every candidate we've endorsed in every race.
Very true.
If you'll take your friends and your workmates and the folks you know at school and the people who live in your apartment complex. Simple. It's not real complicated. I want to get up and read the front page of the New York Times about Houston having a remarkable election for mayor, and the result being national news. And there's only one way to make that happen, and that's for you to do it. Now, the other hot thing is marriage and divorce. They filed a divorce case in a family court in Dallas. Now, we've had divorce cases before in Texas dealing with same-sex couples. I went to testify on behalf of Van Cliburn's Palimony case in Kilgore, Texas. But Kilgore doesn't have family court. They only have civil court.
Okay.
So the case was filed in a regular civil court, and the old judge, who's this old curmudgeon, old, looked to me like, just as a guy that I expected him to turn and spit tobacco any minute. and he came out there, and they were motions to dismiss and disregard, and all, I think I want to hear this case. But we need to get the basics done. There's been a claim of a relationship here. Why don't you prove it up? Show me a lease with two signatures on it, a contract of sale buying a car or a house with two signatures on it, a bank account with two signatures. Prove it up. Show me some tangible evidence to prove that there is a relationship here. And when that wasn't done, judge says, well, we can take recess. This is over with. If you can't prove up the basic element that a relationship existed. And that saved Van Cliburn from having to play his next concert on a piano with 44 keys.
Now explain who Van Cliburn is.
Van Cliburn, whenever I was a kid, was a little bit younger than me. And he was a pianist from Kilgore, Texas. And in spite of the heavy Cold War atmosphere between United States and Russia, this high school student went and won the highest music awards in Moscow playing classical music on the piano. I mean, he made Liberace look lead-fingered. I mean, he was just this remarkable guy. And now he's an old man like me. He's only a couple of years younger than me. And he had a long relationship with somebody. But, see, that went to a regular civil court.
Right.
So the judge wanted to prove up the relationship before he did anything. And the case didn't last but 5 minutes. When that couldn't be done, it was over with. The Dallas case goes to a family court, and it was accepted by the judge, which is prima facie acceptance that there is a relationship.
Exactly, and they have some kind of tangible proof of it.
Right, and the family court business, then immediately the Texas Attorney General wanted to appeal that to the District Court of Appeals for the Dallas District. Down here, it's the 1st and 14th. I don't know, maybe the 7th and the 9th up there. But there are two overlapping jurisdiction appellate courts in Dallas County. And so he went to one of those to appeal it. Wait a minute. This all sounds very familiar. Seems like one time there was a criminal case. John Lawrence, State of Texas versus John Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that case? And the district attorney, Johnny Holmes, appealed that case. No, we appealed it first, and then we won, and then the district attorney, Johnny Holmes, appealed it. And so it went to the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, and we lost there, which meant that the road was clear to take it to United States Supreme Court, mm-hmm. whereupon six of the nine justices said that John Lawrence had a right to privacy in his homes, and criminal sanction for what he does in that home are inherently unconstitutional, and it eliminated criminal laws, not just in Texas, but in every jurisdiction where the Supreme Court and the Constitution rules.
Which basically reversed the 1984 case, or 86 case.
It was 2003 is when we got the Lawrence decision. And that reversed the 1987 case, which is Bowers v. Hardwick, which was the same year my Supreme Court case was heard. I was the only one that won a Supreme Court case that year, and we had three of them go to Supreme Court. And so now, if the Attorney General wants to appeal this to the Appellate District Court, it will go to the Supreme Court of the United States, where in the Supreme Court of Texas, because it's a civil case. It didn't go to court, currently. It goes to Supreme Court. And I'm certain we're going to lose that as the Supreme Court of Texas. Then the way is clear for us to get, for the first time in history, gay marriage equality before the United States Supreme Court. And what have we got? We've got all of New England. We've got all of New England and Iowa.
Yeah.
Recognizing gay marriage as marriage.
Right.
And then we've got some West Coast states recognizing domestic relationships as domestic relationships with state license. It's time for the Supreme Court to weigh in. Are we going to continue to allow some citizens of this country to be legally and civilly treated differently from other citizens? That's the question. And Mr. Texas Attorney General, be careful what you ask for. You want this appealed? I believe we'd be ready. And I'm not afraid to take it to this Supreme Court of the United
really,
States.
Really? This Supreme Court?
This Supreme Court. Equal justice is a big principle. Under a claim of equal justice, even in civil law, it is not unreasonable for us to get Scalia's vote.
That's interesting.
Scalia voted in favor of Hill in Hill versus Houston.
Interesting.
Well, Ray, as always, it's nice to have you by to sort of catch us up.
It's always a joy. I love this show. I love you folks individually and collectively. And
those of you who don't know, this show, this predecessor of this show, we inherited from Ray Hill.
It was a show called Wildenstein, real monster of a radio show. I love you all out there. If you knew how much I love you, you would go vote as soon as they open up that voter polls, because I trust you, too, to do what's best for yourself in this community.
8 a.m. Monday morning. You're listening to Queer Voices.
I'm Jen Mahoney.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 10th, 2009. A report issued this week by Australia's National Human Rights Consultation Committee recommended a statutory charter of rights. The report said a Human Rights Act to create such a Bill of Rights should include a right to marry and adopt, which would likely fuel the country's already simmering debate on marriage equality for gay and lesbian couples. The report also recommends a law guaranteeing the right to life, which is likely to inflame abortion activists on either side of that issue. Australia's High Court would be asked to rule if Parliament passed legislation that could be challenged as incompatible with a provision of the Human Rights Charter. Attorney General Robert McClelland wasn't specific about how the government would respond to the report, saying only that the Rudd administration would carefully consider it and that the key debate is not about whether we protect human rights, it is about how we protect human rights.
A Defense Department funding bill passed this week in the U.S. House of Representatives includes a provision extending hate crime protections to people targeted on the basis of their gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, or disability. The conference report for the bill, which reconciles different versions passed separately in the House and in the Senate, will now move to what is expected to be a quick vote in the Senate. Allison Hurwit, legislative director of the Human Rights Campaign, told reporters that a conference report cannot be amended, so it's simply an up or down vote in the Senate. We are extremely optimistic. The provision is known as the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act. It recognizes Shepard, a gay college student who was brutally murdered in 1998 near Laramie, Wyoming, because of his sexual orientation. Even though existing hate crime laws include race as a protected category, Byrd was also named because he was violently murdered the same year in Jasper, Texas, because he was black. The legislation would expand hate crime laws to include physical assaults based on actual or perceived sexual orientation, gender, gender identity, or disability, and would allow the U.S. Justice Department to assist in the investigation and prosecution of such crimes. Similar legislation, first introduced in 2001, had no real chance of success during the 8-year administration of George W. Bush, who consistently threatened to veto such a measure. Current President Barack Obama has consistently supported it.
The United States Senate is expected to confirm an openly gay lawyer, David Huebner, as the country's next ambassador to New Zealand. While it's not expected to be controversial in New Zealand, it is the Obama administration's first appointment of an openly gay ambassador. Former Presidents George Bush and Bill Clinton each appointed an openly gay ambassador. Huebner is currently a lawyer based in Shanghai for a United States law firm, where he specializes in international arbitration and mediation. He's also general counsel for the U.S. Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. The U.S. ambassador to New Zealand is also traditionally the ambassador to Samoa, and Huebner will also fill that role.
Elsewhere, an estimated 15,000 people filled the streets of Johannesburg, South Africa, on October 4th for the continent's largest ever Pride celebration. Joburg Gay Pride Festival co-chair Tanya Harford said in a press release that this was a record turnout since a not-for-profit company was formed 3 years ago to organize the event. She said this year's festivities saw about 5,000 more celebrants than in 2008. While it was the city's third consecutive annual Pride Festival, Johannesburg hosted Africa's first ever Pride event 20 years ago.
According to a report at gayrussia.ru, which organized the event with gaybelarus.by, more than 100 people from 9 Belarusian cities and 10 other countries gathered in Minsk in late September for what was called a historic LGBT rights conference. The meeting was titled LGBT Movement and NGOs, Prospects for Cooperation with Active Civil Society to Overcome Homophobia in Belarus.
Issues discussed by the conference participants included public activism, psychological and political aspects of homophobia, education of journalists, the role of gay businesses, and religion and homosexuality. Delegates concluded the gathering with a resolution to be sent to the Belarus government and parliament urging passage of laws banning discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, making hate speech a crime, and extending spousal rights to same-gender couples. Representatives from the French, Hungarian, and Swedish embassies attended the conference, and the Swedish embassy hosted an evening reception.
In other news, a court in Moscow this week upheld the refusal of the city's civil registry to issue a marriage license to a lesbian couple. The court ruled that Russian law defines marriage as exclusively heterosexual. Irina Fedotova-Fet and Irina Shapitko said the decision was not unexpected and vowed to appeal. They also said they plan to fly to Canada later this month to legally marry. They'll then return to Russia and demand that authorities recognize the marriage.
In the U.S., the Montana Supreme Court has ruled in favor of a lesbian who sued her former partner for parental rights of the children they helped raise together. According to The Advocate, this week's 6-1 decision granted parental rights to Michelle Kuhlstad of Missoula, who helped raise a boy and a girl with Barbara Maniachi during their 10-year relationship. After the couple broke up in 2006, Kuhlstad sued to maintain her parental rights. Maniachi, the legal adoptive parent of the children, is now married to a man. The court ruled that Kuhlstad had established a parental relationship with the children during the course of her partnership with Maniachi and was worthy of parental rights. In a seemingly extraordinary special concurrence to the majority opinion, Justice James Nelson wrote that he remained absolutely convinced that homosexuals are entitled to enjoy precisely the same civil and natural rights as heterosexuals as a matter of constitutional law. Naming it for the evil it is, discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation is an expression of bigotry. Lesbian and gay Montanans must not be forced to fight to marry, to raise their children, and to live with the same dignity that is accorded heterosexuals.
And finally, if you were booking a flight to Chakopal City in northern Sweden, allegedly populated by 25,000 love-starved lesbians, you might want to reconsider. A story about the city was picked up by news networks in China, where internet providers reportedly couldn't handle the millions of men desperately searching for the city's exact location. It was said to have been created in the 1820s by a man-hating widow, but in reality, Chakopal City is nothing more than an online hoax. Klaus Bertelsen, a government spokesman, told Sweden's English-language news service, The Local, that he had no idea where this came from, but it's not true. He also noted that at 25,000 residents, the town would have to be one of the largest in northern Sweden. Disappointed tourists, all are warmly welcomed, may want to redirect their travel plans to the real Australian town of Alice Springs. A recent television documentary recounted how lesbian culture developed in Alice Springs after several hundred women marched into town in 1983 to protest the nearby Pine Gap U.S. military intelligence base. Many of the participants in the protest were lesbians who came, saw, and decided to stay, the documentary noted. Since then, the town of Alice Springs has become a haven for lesbians. Gay and Lesbian Tourism Australia Regional Director Phil Walcott told reporters this week that Alice Springs was in fact the undiscovered lesbian capital of Australia because of its high per capita residency. Alice is a wonderland, he said.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 10th, 2009. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Jen Mahoney.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee, and I have two guests here in the studio with me. And if you fall asleep on Friday and wake up today and you miss the weekend, which would be very strange, on Saturday and Sunday, it was the National Equality March on Washington. And those of you who had the opportunity to watch it on C-SPAN, I got to see the 4 hours of all of it. And I think they're rerunning it, if I understand correctly. But also, you may have had some friends that went, if in fact you didn't go yourself. But we have two people here in the studio who did go to the march and participated in it. And one is Dan Sharwer from Houston, and our own Brian Levinka.
Howdy, y'all.
Yes, the one with the pictures of the march, if you were listening in the first segment. For those of us who didn't get to go, and there were a lot of events going on all weekend, what was it like?
Well,
what was it like just to be there? And Brian, you first.
Okay, I will speak from my experience. I went to the 93 March, and I went to this year's March. And the 93 March was a lot bigger, but I think the spirit of this march, they estimate 200,000 people. I think the spirit in the way that this march was organized, mostly on the internet and kind of word of mouth, in a very short period of time, really carried the day. And you know what I noticed was there was a lot of youth and kind of younger people marching. And there was a lot of student groups, and even from Houston, which Dan will talk about in a second, we had groups come from the universities and schools here that went to the march.
Now, Dan, I understand there were a lot of Texas people there, a lot of groups from Texas, weren't there?
Yeah, there definitely were. We organized here locally. We got two 15-passenger vans that we shoved 31 people into, actually.
Oh, my gosh.
And drove up there. Was in addition to people like Brian that flew. And I know there was contingents from San Antonio. There was actually a rowdy group from College Station that was there. Then, of course, Dallas, big groups from Dallas and Austin. And one of the organizers as well is from Killeen, right around Fort Hood. Her and her partner were there. So, yeah, the contingent-wise, Texas was one of the biggest ones that I saw from a state standpoint.
We had we got Spirit, you know, kind of rally in the park, and Texas was winning because we were doing all of our chants, and we were winning all the little small states. They were kind of cowering in fear as the Texans united.
Now, did y'all meet a number of Texans when y'all rallied?
We actually had a meetup Saturday night before the before the march at a cool little Italian place in Chinatown in D.C. And I need to give a shout-out to Lakia. There's a whole van that's stuck in traffic right now listening. They're still driving from D.C., so they are tuned in, and a shout-out to them. I know that they're tired and miserable, and I'm sure that they enjoyed the march as much as Dan did and I did myself.
Yeah, and Dan, some of the groups, some of the people you met from all over, you were talking about Killeen and some of these. Were there a lot of small town people there? People had, this was their big chance to get to Washington, D.C. And be part of the happening?
There definitely was. And it's like Brian said, there was a big youth contingent there. I mean, not individually or as a contingent, but there was a high population of youth people, a lot of students. The march was actually led by a contingent of students that sort of organized all around the U.S. in their own campuses and then came together as to lead the march as a combined student group. And overall, the diversity was great. It was young and old, you know, gay, straight, black, white. Everybody was represented. But there was a high amount of young people, and they were incredibly energetic and psyched to be there. So,
and when you're saying young people, we're talking about college age?
Yeah, and even younger. I mean, there was high school people. A lot of the people that we organize with here locally are really a lot of people that have been around Hatch for a little while.
Oh, okay.
So we had...
Our little hatchlings.
Yeah, I mean, we had, you know, people ranging from 18 to 36 on our van. So, I mean, and that, I think, was really indicative of the entire march.
And as far as Brian's concerned, that's youth.
I was 35, and I was feeling, you know, I'm 35. I was feeling a little long in the tooth with the gatherings. I was like, oh, gosh, I'm like the daddy here. So, but, you know, it's great to see kind of the next generation taking up the mantle and kind of being out there marching and out there for our rights. And, you know, 93, the last major march, I think, most of these kids were in grade school. So, you know, the time was now. And in my heart of hearts, I do believe that the march led Obama to speak at the HRC dinner the night before. I think the march actually accomplished that. And I don't think that Obama would have spoken to HRC and to our community had the march not taken place.
Well, one of the things, I'm on the HRC steering committee, and I always get the alerts that come out. We didn't get the notification till Tuesday night that he had said he would be there.
I would have gone.
So
it sold out immediately.
That sort of lends credence to what you say.
Yeah.
For some reason, he had had the invitation, mm-hmm. but had not accepted the invitation till 3 days before, or 4 days, no, actually 3 days before the march began, because I know the event actually started on Friday, didn't it?
Well, they had events starting Friday.
When did you get there?
We got there. Our van that I rode in left Houston 9 a.m. Saturday morning. We got to D.C. 9 a.m. Sunday morning. We immediately went down to meet up with the Texas contingent, marched, watched the rally, got back in the van at 7, and just got back about 2 hours ago.
Y'all are crazy.
Yeah. The other
right,
van...
You have to be young for that.
Yeah.
That's grueling.
And part of the reason we wanted to do it, because, yeah, it sounded crazy to us, but we started to talk to people that... It sounded crazy to them, but they were happy to see another crazy person to actually talk to. and it was, we really had a goal in mind, like, to let's get the youth there. Let's get the people that can't afford to fly. And they were up for it. And we did some good fundraising. We ended up only charging about $55 a person to get to D.C., which, you know, granted, you had to sit in that van for 48 hours. And we, you know, made you drive at least 4 hours of that as well.
And you drove across, not you drove through the South.
Yeah, we pretty much headed from here through Louisiana up into Mississippi. We caught part of Georgia, or maybe, no, Alabama, into Virginia, no, into Tennessee, then Virginia and Maryland. So.
Yeah, did y'all have the van marked as we're on the way to National Equality March?
We did it so quickly that we considered doing that, but part of it, we were just so happy finally after the grueling organizing to actually be in the van and going, because it looked like for a while we wouldn't pull it off, but we got it all together and we got out of town. And some of the places we stopped at, I'm kind of glad we didn't necessarily have, have banners waving.
Wouldn't be any place in the South.
Yeah,
right?
Well, in the middle of the night, you know, you got to look for what's open. And
I think we have proof that God loves the gays, because on Friday and Saturday it was rainy and nasty, and then yesterday the sun came out and it was perfect 7-degree weather.
Well, anytime gays have a march, it always...
I know. And I don't know if you can see on TV, but there wasn't a cloud in the sky and it was perfect weather and everybody's in a great mood, you know, and just the rally. And I think to me the best part is when you're coming down, I think, Connecticut Avenue and you're turning towards the Capitol. Mm-hmm. You're marching down the street, and you see the Capitol in the distance, and you're like, oh, you know, that's where we're ending up. And to see the Capitol getting bigger and bigger, and you end up there, and then there's a sea of people just waiting to hear the rally. And
yeah. Were there any elected officials that showed up to speak?
I can't remember. I believe that there was only at the local level. I think there was maybe some... There was a city councilman, I think, from L.A. I think a city councilman from D.C. People kind of at that level that are working on local initiatives, but nobody nationally that I know of, that I can think of.
I think Congress wasn't in session, so...
No, they've been called back, though. They were actually there, apparently. but it's good that people like Barney Frank didn't show up, because a lot of people were very angry at him. And there were some chants that aren't appropriate for radio about Barney Frank that I heard going on.
One of my
favorite chants was about Obama.
Yeah.
And let Mama marry Mama.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite ones as well.
It was Obama, let Mama marry Mama.
That was great.
That's good. I like that. And you did that well, too, Brian.
Thank you. The other thing I want to say about the march is it started in McPherson Park, and it went around kind of right in front of the White House, and then it cut over to the Capitol. So it was a really cool march route for people to kind of see D.C. And I mean, it was crowded. I mean,
yeah,
it felt, you know, they say 200,000 people, which I think is a good, I feel like that's an appropriate number. Because in 93, it was just a huge sea of people, but this felt more like Houston Pride, the size of the crowd.
Yeah, I had heard initially 150, then AP actually reported last night 300.
But then
I heard more sort of solid reports saying around 200 today. But yeah, speaking of the route, that was amazing to me, because this is the first time I've marched in a national march in D.C. And because it had that turn, there was a point where you actually got to see ahead of the march, because initially, all I can see is the back of the people in front of me.
Right.
You know? But when it made a turn, right when we turned on, I guess, Pennsylvania, and you could see where the Capitol was, like, I could see how many people were in front of me, and it was just amazing. Because we were standing there a long time waiting to get started, and I'm thinking in my head that, oh, they're just starting late. But no, really, it's everybody already going.
There's a lot of people walking in.
Yeah.
So, you know, some people say, you know, was this march necessary?
I have to argue that
no,
it was.
Brian, was this, you know, I've heard that people say that is it necessary? If you want to interview yourself, Brian,
I don't
go right ahead.
I'm trying not to interview myself. Okay, Jennifer, what question? I'm sorry, what was the question?
Was the march really necessary?
I think at this point in our history, in our community struggle for equality, that it was. And I think our community is tired of words from our leadership and our president, and we're demanding action. And I think we're getting to the point where change will be made. Changes will take a time. It's slow. But, you know, we're tired of hearing that you're going to do something. Just go ahead and do it. And I think with the Matthew Shepard hate crimes passing the House of Representatives and going to the Senate this week, and, you know, with promise of Obama to sign it, I think that will be one step in our road to equality and starting to get the protections that we deserve as a community.
So you think that Congress heard or got the message from the march?
Well, I hope so. I think, you know, the march today is different than 93 because we have more coverage, we have more internet, we have more people that are connected to each other and they can get the word out. And I'm sure there's a million pictures from yesterday on Facebook right now. I alone posted 100, 150. So,
well, and I'm sure that, and you have to remember there were events here in town
exactly
in support of the march, and so if you know,
and
dynamic calculation is there were probably tens of millions of people participating, but not actually in the march.
And I think to get 200,000 people plus or minus to D.C. in this economy is astounding. I mean, this is not 93. This isn't the glory days of the 90s. You know, our economy's hurting, and to have people there marching for equality shows that it's important and that, you know, it was necessary.
Yeah, well, and I honor Dan. Y'all, to get a couple of vans and make that long drive, that's astounding.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine.
Astounding.
I can't even be in a plane for 3 hours.
Dan, what was your impression? What did you take home from the experience?
Well, I mean, one of the key there's a couple of reasons that I was excited about this from the beginning and what I'm really taking away from it. And one, Brian sort of mentioned that the real sort of grassroots nature of this was not a very top-down, like a national organization. Like an HRC just says, everybody send us money and then we'll tell you the day we show up kind of a thing. And the woman from Killeen that I mentioned earlier, and I believe her name was Irene, you know, she was someone in Killeen who got in touch with the march organizers and said, I'm excited, I want to help. And, you know, the sort of the old model would say, okay, well, send us money and we'll let you know when things go on. And they were like, okay, you're going to help organize. And she started organizing. You know, Cleve Jones intentionally sort of you know, wanted this to be that really grassroots where everybody just takes it and runs with it and then goes to D.C. And I think that what we did is sort of indicative of that. It was like, this is what's going on. You go do your thing, get a couple of vans and meet us there, sort of a thing. And then coming out of it, I really liked what Cleve had said as well, that, you know, we're organizing to march and then we're marching to organize. And so
exactly.
Yeah. And so the idea
I heard
is,
that quote. Yeah.
That we're, you know, this is not the end. This is actually the beginning of this movement. I mean, let's bring it all back. And I think Ray might have been mentioning this earlier.
Ray
as
did.
Well. Like, let's bring it back and let's organize here. There's a lot of stuff we could be working on. You know, Anise Parker be the mayor soon, hopefully.
Oh, and, knock on wood for that.
And we'll have, you know, but again, we got to pressure any of the elected officials, whoever they are. And I think that there's a lot we can do locally and statewide and then connecting with the national.
Well, and it's something always to remember. If you're out there and you're thinking about what can I do, all politics are local.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it be the school board or your city council member or the county clerk, whatever it is. Get involved. Organize your friends around that. Brian, what did you bring back from it? What was the experience to you, and what did you bring back?
It energized me in a way that the next generation is getting involved and is not complacent, and that equality is on the forefront of the society and the next generation. And I think as the middle generation and the older generations are kind of, you know, started the fight for equality, I think we're at the point where we're going to end the fight for equality very soon. And, you know, and the one thing this march was criticized for was, you know, we put all this effort into going to the D.C. Why don't you just do that at home? Well, I think we at home are still doing that, but we did this on top of the local activities. And like Dan was saying, you know, this is the beginning of activism on the local level. And I got an email today from somebody in Dallas who wants to continue our statewide cooperation and kind of keep moving forward with our statewide initiatives and getting equality and legal protection in the state of Texas. I know it's a dream of dreams.
That's a dream of dreams under this current administration.
Well, I know, but you know, everything starts with a dream and, you know, putting some words and action into it. And
would you do it again?
I would do it tomorrow.
You would do it tomorrow?
Absolutely.
Dan?
I wouldn't
would
do it
again?
Tomorrow.
It's better when you fly.
Yeah, only somebody that flew would say that.
Exactly. Well, we, you know, there was a point in the trip, and it comes, you know, halfway through when it's 4 a.m. and it's your turn to drive and you slept 30 minutes, where you think, I would never do this again if I lived to be 100 years old. But once, you know, once we got back, you know, the last leg, the sun came up, you know, we drove 12 more hours to get here, and I feel great about it. I would absolutely do it again. I wouldn't do it next week.
I'd do it tomorrow. I'd fly back.
If you will buy me a ticket, I will fly back tomorrow.
I definitely
will.
Well, we've been talking with Dan Sharber and our own Brian Levinka, who both participated and were present at the March on Washington yesterday.
I can't believe it was yesterday.
I can't either. It's
just, and I want to thank y'all for being here. And this is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm David Dye from the World Cafe, and I'm sitting here surrounded by stacks of CDs. My iTunes is filled with MP3s, and I'm reading three music magazines. And this is just a normal day. I weed through all this to find out the best for you. On every World Cafe, we present new music you're going to love alongside old faves you already do. Oh, and we'll talk with a wide variety of artists from newcomers to Hall of Famers. The World Cafe, we make sense of a world of music.
Tune in to World Cafe weekdays at noon and visit kpft.org for a complete schedule of upcoming World Cafe guests. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards. But if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and at the same time take care of that unfinished business. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's that simple to support the station you've come to rely on for alternative music, news, and public affairs programming. Again, for more information or to make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. You're tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, radio for people.
It is nothing, it is all, it is love, it's beautiful. Had the inspiration within my soul, but when I saw him, I knew I would never find the strength to let him go. Like an angel, he came through the rock and the rain. It was my heart. I was and I am from now to the end of for him, till death do us part. And let me in.
everything, it is all, it is life, it's beautiful, it's still love. It is nothing, it is all, it is love, it's beautiful.
From his album Last Chance, that was Jimmy Worm, and the title of the track was It's Still Love. Coming up next, Jackie Ware, volunteer coordinator for the Harris County Hospital District, to talk about the Thomas Street Clinic. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
This way.
Well, we're going to talk about volunteering, and actually, this is sort of a special type of volunteering. It's volunteering with patients, patient mentoring. With us is Jackie Ware and Rich Ehrenschild. And Jackie, you're with Thomas Street Clinic.
Yes, I am.
And Rich, you're with?
LBJ Hospital.
Okay. So they're both county-run facilities. And how did this program start? Has this always been around, or is this, you know, I always thought of the candy stripe barrels, I guess, back in the old days. This is not quite the same thing.
Well, if you're talking about the patient mentor program, or are you talking about volunteerism for Harris County Hospital District?
Let's talk about both. Let's talk, okay. What's the difference?
Well, volunteerism started many years ago at the old JD Hospital with the Quakers, I think, started that.
Wow.
And have you ever read the book called The Hospital? And that's very informative about how volunteerism started at the Harris County Hospital District. And the patient mentor program started at Thomas Street as a pilot project about 7 years ago. There was a little stipend involved from one of the drug companies, and then it just kind of went away. And then it started again when I went back to the hospital district after leaving there. After my son passed away in 1998, I left there and went over to Bentov for about 4 years. And then when I went back, I decided that there really need to be a program there that really concentrated on the new client, the new patient coming to Thomas Street, because there's a lot of fear, you know, being diagnosed with HIV for the first time and finding a place for treatment. So that program started when I went back, and I decided that we need to concentrate on those new clients. And so we started with 9 volunteers that wanted to volunteer, and they, in order to be a patient mentor, they needed to have been a patient themselves for at least 1 year. They needed to be open about their status. We can't obviously keep a secret if you're going to share your experience.
Right, right.
And they needed to commit to at least one morning per week, you know, to come in and help the new clients. So the program now is going on its 5th year. It's been very successful. In fact, it's been so successful that the medical director, Dr. Thomas Giordano, has applied for a grant from the National Institute of Health, and he just recently was awarded that grant to take this program over into the hospitals.
Wow.
People that are diagnosed, or maybe they're not into care, and they just use an emergency room as their care. So when they go, for instance, end up at Bentov maybe and are hospitalized, then we offer them a patient mentor, someone to go bedside and speak to them about getting into care and leading them into care at Thomas Street.
Now, when Thomas Street was first opened up, it was rather controversial about it was being out in the middle of nowhere. We were segregating all people with HIV and probably another, you know, and then the fear of going to a public hospital. But that's not really true, is it?
That's not true. In fact, when my son went there, that was my first experience with public health care, and I was very frightened of that. I did not have any experience with the public health care. He had insurance, had a job, had all those things, lost those as a consequence of being, you know, becoming positive. And so he had to go to the public health care system. And I was very frightened, frankly, because I had not experienced that. And then to my really surprise, I found out that the very best doctors are there. And so he was kept alive for 16 years. And there was, as you know, there was not many meds back in those days.
Absolutely.
But he got excellent care. And as a result, I started out as a volunteer myself there and worked for the People with AIDS Coalition at the time, who had the contract for the volunteer arm at Thomas Street. And then when that funding was gone, then the Harris County Hospital District did keep the, you know, program open. And so I had asked to go back if we ever could, you know, have that program. So that's how I ended up back at Thomas Street.
And how do you find the volunteers? I mean, they have to be a patient, first of all.
Well, to be a patient mentor, they have to be a patient at least 1 year, because obviously you couldn't be somebody new and know the system. To be a patient mentor, you can be a volunteer in some other capacity, you know, from the community or the colleges. We have volunteers that come from a lot of volunteers come from the colleges and the schools, churches. We've been out, Rich and myself have been out to many churches and talked to people. So just like we're doing, talking about it.
Explain what a patient mentor is.
Well, the patient mentor is a patient themselves who goes with, when we have a new client come in, they're offered a patient mentor. Would you like someone to go with you? And they go with them through that whole appointment. They go with them up to screening, they go with them to have an x-ray, they're with them that whole appointment. We had one come this morning, and Ed Barnes, who's one of our patient mentors, it was a young client, and he was with him through the whole appointment. So they're very frightened when you know, like going to your doctor. I mean, you're a little reticent,
right,
about going.
Right, and navigating
the system.
Right.
And a lot of the patients that we get there are, they've had HIV for a while. Some of them have, and they have not been in care. So they frequently show up sick. They're sick. And so it's very hard, you know, from just the ordinary, where's the restroom?
Exactly.
Where's the water fountain? How do I, if I need financial assistance, what do I do? What paperwork do I need to fill out?
And sometimes when a doctor explains something, you may not grasp it all.
Well, here's what happens, and we don't give any medical advice. We do a lot of training with the patient mentors.
Okay.
Every month we have some type of education, continuing education for them, but they're cautioned. They're never to give any medical advice. They can talk about their experience living with HIV. They can talk about, you know, how they've done, but we don't want them to discourage a patient to talk about any medications they might, you know, be on, or we don't want them to say, well, I took that medication and that was terrible. We don't want to do that because we don't want
them.
They're
not doctors.
No, they're not doctors. So they're mostly there to talk about their, they can talk about their experience, and they can lead them to the right answers. You know, they can. We have a social service department, so all of the departments are there that they need, and they know those departments and those people. So that's what there are. It's just to guide them into service.
So, Rich, why don't you chime in?
Well, I think just to add a little bit more, Jackie and I've done a lot of work at Thomas Street over the last,
and you're good friends,
15
also.
Years.
So you,
yes,
you
we
compare
are.
Compare notes.
Come by any Friday night, and you'll see us together at El Paraiso. But I think the thing that I think the community needs to know about Thomas Street and is that, number one, it's one of the largest freestanding HIV clinics in the nation. Has a long 20-year history. I think this year is its 20th year in existence, which is quite phenomenal. And also, I think the other thing that's amazing about Thomas Street is that the care that you get at Thomas Street is just on the same par as you would get from any privately insured doctor that you would access anywhere in the city. A lot of good research has been done at Thomas Street. A lot of Houston's preeminent professionals, healthcare professionals, have been trained at Thomas Street. And so, you know, the attitude that the public has about the Harris County Hospital District, and i.e. the public healthcare system, I think it has really changed over the last years, especially as we've really come into some incredible knowledge that happens at Thomas Street and great research that happens there. So, you know, if you're in a situation where, you know, we often refer to the Harris County Hospital District as Houston's medical safety net. And if you're in a situation like, you know, Jackie's son Rusty was, you know, everybody is one or two paychecks away from being
exactly
a client of the Harris County Hospital District. And I think regardless of what your situation is, but specifically with HIV, if you have to fall into that safety net, you're in pretty good hands. And
I guess the only requirement is that you don't have insurance and you live in Harris County. Is that
actually that's really not true? We do see people that don't have insurance, but we do accept insurance. The Medicare, Medicaid clients are some of our clients, but we do accept insurance. So that does not prevent a person from coming there if they have insurance.
How do you think this happened, that Thomas Street got to be so good? Because in the early days of HIV/AIDS, this whole area was not conceived. Even though we had some of the best medical centers in the world, somehow we were lacking in that respect. Is that a fair question?
Well, I think as the epidemic, and Jackie and I have been involved pretty much since the beginning, as the epidemic has matured, as increased funding has become available for research and medical care, and really, in a way, as more people have had to deal with this disease, we've become much more skilled about it. The pharmaceutical companies have been much more adroit at developing medicines that are much easier to take, that have a simpler side effect profile. And all these things have kind of combined over time, whereby we have this kind of brain trust that Thomas Street is, where we have these physicians that have seen a lot of patients over the years. And in some ways, those large numbers, although it's not a good thing that people are HIV positive, studies involving large numbers of people over the years have really helped us as scientists and caregivers to figure out what works and what's effective. And Thomas Street, I think, has been a big part of that and has really benefited from a lot of that.
And, of course, there is no cure at this time.
Right.
And is it considered manageable yet, or is it... We don't know yet, do we?
Well, that depends on who you talk to, I think. And I think we've both, you know, we hear this comment of chronic manageability, and people liken HIV to diabetes or hypertension or that kind of thing. And yet, you know, we still have significant groups of people, specifically those who were on monotherapy early on in the epidemic, who face serious challenges. And as I've said before on this show, you know, we have one of the benefits of people doing better is they're living longer. So you have an aging population. So not only do they have to deal with HIV, a lot of the physicians at Thomas Street are now dealing with, you know, heart disease and you know, things that you...
Complications
really due to age. So as to whether or not it's manageable, I don't know. Jackie, what do you think about that?
People are still dying.
I think it is manageable for those people who are committed to being in care, to really being in care. You cannot ignore this disease. You can't ignore it, but it will get your attention. So what I tell people, some of my patient mentor volunteers have had this disease for 20 years, 16 years, 12 years, 15 years. But we also see people that still die because they don't get into care, or they have care intermittently and they don't do what they're, you know, it's very hard to care for yourself if you're in a situation where maybe you're homeless, or maybe you have some addiction problems, or some of those, you know, you have hepatitis C, you're dual diagnosed with hepatitis C, you're a diabetic. And as Rich said, the longer you live, then the more kinds of medical issues you're going to have simply because of your age. So then those other things come along combined with HIV. So no, there's not a cure.
And I guess there's still a question of funding. Ryan White money?
Well, we continue to see in the newest concern, and we've had some advocates in Houston, not to get too far off topic, but we've had some advocates in Houston who have been in Washington, D.C. I know Ken Malone has been there. The gentleman from Legacy.
Randall Ellis.
Randall Ellis was, they were up in Washington.
And he is a good lobbyist.
Right. Right.
And we're saying that in a good term.
Right.
Yeah.
Lobbying for our concerns and for the things that we value as part of the support for the HIV positive community. One of the concerns that they have with regard to funding for this disease is, will what has historically been Ryan White funding, really, really specialized funding for HIV, will that be kind of engulfed into the larger healthcare debate? And one of the other questions I think that is worthy of being asked is, now that the general public has this attitude of chronic manageability for HIV, does that in some way, do we lose our exclusivity there in terms of Ryan White funding? And not only funding for medical issues, but also a large part of Ryan White, as you know, funds support services for people with HIV, everything from transportation to child care. And if those dollars are incorporated into the healthcare debate and incorporated into a Medicare, Medicaid type payer system, what happens to all those support and ancillary services that people with HIV use to get to transportation for their appointments and things like that? So one of the things that the folks who were advocating for us in Washington, there was a problem about the Ryan White Care Act had a sunset provision that was included in it that they've now gotten reversed. But there is some language in the Care Act that's currently being debated regarding giving the act what's called such sums as necessary in order to keep those items that we need funded. So there's essentially been level funding for the last 5 to 8 years. So you have a situation where you have medications that are becoming more expensive, you have a population that is aging and needing more care, and you also have infections that continue at about 40,000 per year, pretty much unabated for the last 10 years. So the funding issue is, it's always kind of the struggle we have with level funding, but now there's a new wrinkle in terms of, where does HIV and AIDS fit into healthcare reform, and how is it funded on the larger level?
Hopefully it will come out good, but it's, we don't know. We just don't know, do we?
And the other interesting thing is you would kind of expect this difficulty with a Republican administration and with a Republican-controlled Congress. But here we are, we're facing these issues, and we have a democratically controlled legislative body. We have a Democratic president who is supposedly supportive of our work, and yet still, even in this political environment, funding for HIV still seems to be tenuous and vulnerable.
And at the same time, we have a county that's controlled by the Republicans.
Exactly. Now, with regard to that, the county government, Harris County, and this goes back to the previous administration, they know that federal Ryan White care funds come from Washington, D.C. to Harris County. So the Harris County officials are smart enough to know that this chunk of change that comes to provide medical care for Thomas Street and a lot of other services here in Houston, we need to preserve that money, because If that money doesn't come from Washington, that money comes from the property taxpayers of Harris County. So there were our county officials, Judge Emmett and the judge before him, I think are right on track in terms of making sure that Houston gets its share of that pie.
So if somebody wants to get involved, how do they do that?
Well, let me talk a little bit about, if I may, where I live and work and have my being, which is LBJ Hospital. And I want to just mention just a little bit about the district, the hospital district, which is, again, the medical safety net. Just some facts and figures for you to understand kind of the immensity of this institution that we work for. Last year in 2008, we saw almost 1 million outpatient visits. We have... A baby is born in the hospital district every 48 minutes. So every 48 minutes of every single day of every year, we bring a baby into the world. And so there are a lot of needs, aside from Thomas Street and the needs of the HIV-positive community, there are a lot of needs for just the general population in this county. And I think... to be involved in that, one of the restrictions that we have at the hospital district is because we are primarily a tax-funded institution, we cannot provide things like, you know, little luxuries for our patients. When you come to our facility, there's no lobby that looks like a hotel. You know, no one parks your car. No one valet parks your car when you come to our facility. You know, and so the needs, and additionally, because our patients are essentially without insurance and exclusively medically indigent, they have very little when they walk into the door. And so the things that we provide them, even baby clothes, diapers, blankets for senior citizens, those are all coming from donations. And part of the way people donate is by basically volunteering their time for us. And so where people primarily access us is, as usual, through the web. You can go to www.hchdonline.com. If you go there and you click on a tab that says volunteers, it will take you to all the forms that you need to fill out to volunteer. It'll give you, provide you an orientation schedule. We have, you know, a lot of hospitals in Houston require their volunteers to do this amazing training for volunteers. And what we do at the district, we provide really what we call kind of on-the-job training for our volunteers. And we ask that our volunteers complete an application. We do a background check on our volunteers. We provide a TB skin test, and then we speak to the volunteer and we say, okay, Jackie, where would you like to volunteer? Because we don't want to make people volunteer. We want to ask people, what do you want to do? Well, I'm a makeup artist. Okay, would you like to work in chemotherapy with ladies that need help looking beautiful? Would you like to rock babies? Would you like to, you know, do computer data entry? Would you, you know, the possibilities are endless, and all we ask is really one afternoon or morning a week. So we don't ask a lot of time. What we would like is we want people who are happy, want people who smile, people who connect, because, you know, I don't know if you ever watched Nurse Jackie on
cable.
I don't,
but I've heard about it, yes.
She made it. She did, and I always think of Jackie, actually, when I hear that. She said a line once that I remember. She said, you know, people come to us on the worst day of their life, and we have to make it better. And that's what volunteers do for us. And
well, that is a perfect ending note. Thank you very much, Rich Ehrenschild and Jackie Weir. Very interesting, and I'll have to have you come back again.
Anytime.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
There are places you go to get the quick news.
You know the kind. Those three-line summaries of world issues and events.
The celebrity gossip.
The intellectual junk food.
And then there's public radio.
You tune to KPFT each day because you need more than just the summary.
You need to hear the whole discussion to make informed decisions.
You need to understand the background, to understand the cultures, ideas, and history that touches our lives.
You want music from more than five corporations.
You need a choice. And that's why you tune to community radio, because you have to know more.
People like you support KPFT to keep us on the air.
So visit kpft.org today to become a member of this station.
This is listener-sponsored,
commercial-free,
Pacifica Radio,
KPFT, Houston.
Picture yourself driving home listening to a great story or a song or a discussion.
Suddenly, you find yourself parked, but rather than turn the radio off, you stay in your car to hear what you're listening to the end.
That's called a driveway moment.
A driveway moment?
Yes, it's that moment that you just can't get out of the car because what you're hearing is just that good.
Then hey, what better place to support KPFT?
KPFT features music, news, and talk that is so compelling people will do anything to hear the end of it. If you're in your car right now and have your cell phone with you, as soon as you pull in, give a call to our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314.
Give me that number again.
713-526-4000, extension 314. Speak to our membership department and become a member.
Your pledge of support helps keep this valuable resource on the air. This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
This is Queer Voices.
As many of the listeners of Queer Voices...
And this is Jennifer Renee.
I was introducing... I was going to say that our listeners know that the director of Bayou City Performing Arts left Houston, and there's a new director.
Absolutely.
And this is Jennifer Renee and Brian Levinka.
Yes.
And who do we have in the studio, Jennifer?
Okay, we have Catherine DiPaggio, who's the new executive director, and Lena Slinner.
Lerner.
Okay, artistic director. See, I already apologized for messing up their names, but I did get DiPaggio right.
Yes, you did. Thank you very much.
It just rolls off. So, well, welcome to our show. There's some exciting things going on, aren't there?
Absolutely.
Ah, we're going to have to hear about it.
So for our listeners that have no clue what the Bayou City Performing Arts is, what is BCPA?
Bayou City Performing Arts is an umbrella organization that encompasses the Gay Men's Chorus of Houston. It's one of the oldest gay men's choruses in the United States. We've been here, this is our 31st year. It also includes the Bayou City Women's Chorus, and they're celebrating their 5th anniversary this year. I'm very proud of that.
We've had them on.
And the combined choral group is the Bayou City Chorale. So this is an umbrella organization. We sing in Jones Hall, we sing at Unity Church, and we have a fabulous concert series coming up this year.
It's been around for a while, has it not? Since what, 79?
31 years, 1979. Yes. Yeah, long time. It started out as the Montrose Singers many years ago.
Now, Catherine, where did you come from?
I've been here in Houston for almost 20 years now.
Oh, okay. And so how did they pick you to be the executive director?
Well, I've been in nonprofit management for many, many years and fundraising experience.
Oh, there you go.
So I worked with some of the larger institutions here in town, was looking for something a little exciting, more exciting to do. And I live in the neighborhood.
A little bit more gay.
That always works when you live in the neighborhood. Yeah.
And it's wonderful. I actually get to walk to work every day, so it's very nice.
Very good. And Linus, how did they find you?
They found me, I think, just like any other job, looking for a new director. And I saw the advertising of that through Gala Choruses, Inc. And then I applied, and here I am. I loved Houston from many years ago. I was here the first time, like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, time to move on. I had a chorus... a gay chorus in Tucson, Arizona, and, you know, I think it's time to move on to something bigger, and then I can do the projects that I had.
Now, I noticed you seem to have somewhat of an accent, which would mean that you probably didn't come from East Texas. Where
absolutely not. No, I come from Amarillo. No, I'm just kidding. I'm actually from Brazil, but I'm German origin. Born in Brazil, so my first language was German, and then Portuguese, and English is my 5th language. So it's kind of a mess of accents right there.
So how do you feel about Broadway musicals? And will we see a lot of those? I hope.
You will see a lot of things, actually. You see a mixing of many things. My background is basically in classical to popular to Broadway to opera, everything.
Okay. We like that.
So what's coming up in the near future? What do you have involved?
First of all, we're going to have a fantastic season with this, both choruses. Okay, I said that the three words that is going to portray our season this year. It's fun, community, and quality. We are working all of them already together. We are already achieving so much of that. The fun. I mean, it's very important that the members have fun with what they're doing, and it seems that everybody's having a great time.
Right.
So if we have fun on stage, the audience will have fun. Okay, I have that vision of, for example, for the gay men's chorus, it's like, we're gay. It's not time anymore to apologize or excuse yourself or anything. Just go there and show how proud and happy you are. Okay, and that's my vision, and I was very happy with that I achieved in Tucson with that same philosophy. The community is, I want to embrace every other non-profit organizations, not just GLBT organizations, any organization that can work with us to have that sense that the differences, you know, vive la différence, as they say in French, is what makes interesting. And we already have some partnerships. We have, in fact, a bigger partnership coming up with the AIDS Foundation of Houston. We're going to have other partnerships with where we're bringing Kate Clinton to be our guest for our last show of the season.
Wonderful.
Yes, and the show is Let's Misbehave, so you can have an idea what it's going to be.
Oh, wonderful.
And then the quality is, you know, the fact that, I mean, being part of all this gays, the gala choruses, which has, you know, hundreds of gay choruses, we are looking, all of us in all the country, looking for more quality. So that, you know, we are a gay chorus. We have the gay part being the mission, the GLBT mission, but also we want to be looked upon as like, you know, we sing wonderfully, we have great quality, and people will come to us because also we sound really good.
Right.
So all those three ingredients is what we are working right now, and I think we are achieving a lot on that. I'm looking forward because the season is looking fantastic. You know, just giving a first concert with the women's is Winter Light. It's going to be the moods of winter, all sort of preparing the season for Christmas, for any holiday.
And when is this scheduled?
It's on December the 5th and December the 8th at Unity Church. Okay, that's they do two concerts because. Unity Church is not so big, but the guys, the gay men's chorus just do one because we do at Jones House. It's a huge auditorium. And then the first show we are doing is the Twisted Holidays. So just with that title,
That's very intriguing. What does that mean?
I mean, think about you every year. Okay, you having a radio, you know what I'm talking. Every year having the same music on the radio over and over and over, and all the radios now change for, you know, the same Christmas music. So, yes, we're going to do that, and we're going to sing them beautifully. But after we sing them beautifully, we're going to twist them. So, for example, we're going to sing an Ave Maria by Franz Bibel.
Yes.
Beautiful, like monks singing, you know, very Gregorian chant. And then we're going to sing Christmas in the Cloister, which is a bunch of gay monks singing about their decoration on the Christmas, you know.
Well, you know, the Gay Men's Chorus has a very large, long-standing tradition for their Christmas concerts. They're very big and they're very popular.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking forward to what you can bring and the twist, I guess.
It's like, you know, the formula is sort of Cirque, the Cirque du Soleil, you know, or like any circus, you have the serious part and then you come to clowns.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's what they
I know they used to have like the first half of the show was serious and then the second was fun. We're going to have serious fun. It's going to be really fun.
Well, they have a lot of dancing and costumes in years past.
Like Home for the Holidays, followed by Homo for the Holidays.
There you go.
You know,
that kind of stuff. One year they had the Jalapeno Chorus where they did, you know, like the Last Supper. It's still to this day, I think about it and laugh.
Are you asking for an encore? Is that what you're
That is actually our encore.
Estimated impression.
The Jalapeno Chorus.
I'm going to buy tickets tomorrow.
And when will this be performed? So everyone.
The Gay Men's Chorus is going to be performed at Jones Hall on December the 15th. Which is a Tuesday night.
Okay. Before you move on, how do we get tickets? Where do we contact you to give tickets?
You can go direct to our website, which is BayouCityPerformingArts.org. You can call us at 713-521-SING, which is 521-7464.
And the website is?
The website has all the information. It's BayouCityPerformingArts.org.
And they can find out all
they
the,
can find
when the shows
everything
are,
is there,
where they
can
are.
Even get the seat that they want in the theater.
Get the seat at Jones Hall.
That's great.
They can pick their own seats. They can buy a subscription for all three of the Gaiman's Course concerts, or they can do all a five subscription, which is both the women's concerts and the men's all together. Everything is right on our website, and we encourage people to go there. It's very easy to use. They can make a donation. I want to remind people that we are an all-volunteer chorus.
I was going to ask you about that. If we have listeners out there that sing in their bathroom or sing in the car, and they sound pretty good to themselves, can they come and audition, or how does that work?
Absolutely. We are we really don't audition. We like just do a voice placement. If you can hold a tune.
I can't.
I'm sure you can.
No, my partner says I can't sing, and I try to sing, and he's like,
just
stop.
Just bring your bucket. Anybody can hold a tune in a bucket.
We have plenty of other volunteer opportunities for non-singers.
I'm good at, like, fundraising and stuff. Yes. Like
and someone has to handle the props.
That's right.
I can carry
we things. We need that, too. Mm-hmm. And then the choruses are up. I mean, the Gaiman's Chorus, we are in a membership around about 80 people now, which from 55 less shows.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're growing.
But we want a bit, you know, we want a massive chorus.
And how about the women?
The women are pretty good, very strong. They are sounding absolutely fantastic already. They're 46 women strong.
Wonderful.
And a pretty good group, too, for their fifth anniversary.
Right. We're going to do some special things this year, particularly for the women. Not only are they going to have some fabulous concerts, but they're also, we want to do something to celebrate their 5 years of being together and being here in the community.
Now, if somebody really wants to get involved, what time of amount of time they're going to have to dedicate
to be a member, a singing member?
Yes.
Basically, you know, rehearsals at least once a week. The men rehearsals, they have the rehearsal on Monday nights, and the mm-hmm. women on Tuesday nights, about 3 hours rehearsal time. And of course, sometimes a retreat and performances and extra hours depending on what we do, outreach and stuff like that. But you know, what we are asking for all of them is, like, you know, commit yourself to at least that night. Mm-hmm. That's the essential. And
well,
other
that's
things
really what I
around.
Want to make sure. So if somebody's out there, well, I just don't have time. Mm-hmm. Well, if they have an idea of what kind of commitment they have to make, either for the women's or the men, the gay men's course, then they have an idea where they can do it. So don't say no before you try.
Yeah, I always say, if you want something done, give to someone that is busy. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
If they can commit to 3 hours one night a week, you know, just again commit to that, they can sing with the chorus. And we don't ask them to commit to every single concert. We'd like to commit to 2 out of 3, particularly for the men, because we want to keep, you know, you need to have a nice number.
Right.
In your chorus. So
it has to blend together.
And Linus needs to know how many people are going to be there, and, you know, who, so he can get things set, and, you know, what songs they can perform, and we need to know for the size of the venues that we use. I did want to add one other venue that we do use, too, is Festival Hill at Round Top.
Oh, yes.
On December 12th, the men and the women go up to Round Top and sing a special Christmas concert up there. So I would encourage our listeners to go online to Round Top Festival Hill or through our website. And if they feel like going up there for the day, it's a 3 o'clock in the afternoon Saturday concert on December 12th. They go up there and
give us the information again for tickets real quickly.
Tickets are at BayouCityPerformingArts.org, mm-hmm. or they can call 713-521-7464.
What would you like to say? Anything we've missed?
I would like to say that you know, everything in a way changed. You know, when you have a new artistic director, a new executive director, you're set for a big change, because not just one person changed, but the whole center of you know, like the staff changed totally, basically, this year. So you're going to see a different chorus. You're going to see a different view. You're going to see a season that is totally different what has been done before. And, you know, I encourage people to come and check us out.
All right. And thank you. We've been talking with Catherine DiPaggio, the executive director, and Linus Lenner,
the artistic director.
The artistic director from the Bayou Performing Arts. And this is Queer Voices.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
People and their supporters took to the streets of Washington, D.C. by the thousands for the National Equality March on October 11th. President Barack Obama has promised to significantly advance LGBT civil rights by the end of his anticipated second term, and he reiterated those intentions with all the passionate eloquence of his previous pledges at the Human Rights Campaign's gala annual dinner the night before the march. March co-chair Cleve Jones told CNN's Anderson Cooper.
We have struggled and fought for fractions of equality.
You're talking about state-by-state action, referendums.
Yes, exactly. State-by-state, county-by-county, city-by-city. And even when we win, those victories are incomplete and impermanent. They're incomplete because the most important rights are granted not by the states but by the federal government. And they are impermanent because we've seen they can be so easily overturned. So we're marching this weekend to say first to LGBT America that we are equal and it's time we start acting like it and stop accepting compromises and delays. We want to send a message to the President and Congress that we are full citizens, taxpayers, voters. We believe we're equal and we want equal protection under the law in all matters governed by civil law in all 50 states. And that is the one demand.
This White House Christopher Gall heard many reasons to march from some of the people who filled the streets of Washington for the event, including tennis legend Martina Navratilova. When they arrived at the end of their trek, they were greeted by This White House's Rick Watts, who served as rally announcer on the main stage.
It's nice to have a voice in Washington and in this country again, because we've been marginalized and ignored for 8 years, so it's nice to have a president that's behind us.
I've been fighting the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell for a while now, and this is pivotal to really get in numbers and put a face on gay veterans. We're honorable, we're brave, we're courageous. And we go back for generations. I think that's the most beautiful thing is you see these older gentlemen and what they've done for their country. You see Purple Heart. It's compelling. I'm a veteran myself.
Yes. Where veteran?
I spent 28 months in the Gulf. I trained and utilized dogs to keep explosives and insurgents out of Afghanistan and Iraq.
Now, please welcome to the stage San Diego City Commissioner Nicole Burrow-Ramirez, who's also a member of the Executive Committee of the National Equality March.
I stand before you as a proud Latino, a senior citizen, a Christian, a voter, and a proud gay American. Buenos dias, mi compadres and comadres. Good afternoon or good evening, my brothers and sisters. I have marched on Washington with you in 1979. 1987, 1993, 2000, and now this senior citizen has marched with you in 2009. And this old happy warrior will march with you until my last breath till we achieve full equality. For the GLBT movement is indeed the civil rights movement of the 21st century. And we must continue our fight in the streets and in the suites of political power. My brothers and sisters, the time has come for us to become better bridge builders. We must extend our hands out in support of the communities and issues of the African American, Latino, Asian Pacific Islander, Native American communities. Build bridges to the religious spiritual communities, our labor union families, environmentalists, immigration rights, the anti-death penalty campaign, and the women's movement. Build bridges. These are difficult times for many Americans, and there are those who are trying to wage a cultural war and divide Americans. But you know what, my brothers and sisters? I've lived through the yellow journalism of the McCarthy era. And hey, Fox News, you too will not succeed in turning Americans against each other. It's our flag too, our national anthem too, and our government. A sleeping giant has awoken among us. GLBT youth and students. And stop telling our youth that they are our future, for they are our here and now.
We're from Bronx Community Pride Center, which is on 3rd Avenue and 149th Street.
Yes.
Yes, representing, we want equality. Yeah.
When did you decide to come to this march?
Well, they told me about this yesterday, and, you know, I was all for it, just to come in to protest with my fellow gay members.
And what are your impressions so far?
So far, it's real good. It's cute. You know what I'm saying? It feels like that we're getting something done. We're actually coming together and, you know, marching for something that we all want.
Have you been in parades in...
No, this is my first parade. This is my first parade. I'm real excited for this one. I hope, you know, we get through this one.
I am from San Antonio, Texas. This is my partner over there. We've been together for 35 years. We've never been part of a national march before, equality. And we just decided we wanted to come and be part of this experience.
I'm sure you know there's been some criticism of the march through the last number of months.
We've even heard that within our own organization. There's been pros and cons about the march. But I say, hey, you know, there are those of us who are here who are involved locally, and there are those of here who are not involved locally. So hopefully all of us who are here will get involved locally, you know, when we go back home.
Please welcome to the stage Maxim Thorne, founder of Weekend Renewing America's Promise, to the stage.
I have the incredible distinction of introducing you to our keynote speaker, Julian Bond, has been the chairman of the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, for more than a decade.
46 years ago, I was in another march at the other end of this mall. Marching with me then were a quarter of a million others, white and black and brown, women and men, gay and straight. And standing at the podium, at the feet of the statue of Abraham Lincoln, right beside Martin Luther King Jr., was the gay man who brought us all here that day, who organized the march, Byard Rustin. When I'm asked, are gay rights civil rights, my answer always is, of course they are. Civil rights are positive legal prerogatives, the right to equal treatment before the law. These are rights shared by everyone. There is no one in the United States who does not, or who should not, share in enjoying these rights. Rights for gays and lesbians aren't special rights in any way. It isn't special to be free from discrimination. That is an ordinary, universal entitlement of citizenship. The right not to be discriminated against is a common place claim we all expect to enjoy under our laws and our founding document, the Constitution. That many had to struggle to gain these rights makes them precious. It does not make them special, and it does not reserve them only for me or restrict them from others. When others gain their rights, my rights are not diminished in any way. My rights are not diluted when my neighbor enjoys protection from discrimination. He or she becomes my ally in defending the rights we all share. Now, for some people, comparisons between the African-American civil rights movement and the movement for gay and lesbian rights seems to diminish the long black historical struggle with all of its suffering, sacrifices, and endless toil. But we people of color ought to be flattered that our movement has provided so much inspiration for others, that it has been so widely imitated, and that our tactics, our methods, our heroes, our heroines, and even our songs have been copied or served as models for others. Now, no parallels between movements is exact. African Americans are the only Americans who were enslaved for more than two centuries, and people of color carry the badge of who we are on our faces. But we are far, far, far from the only people suffering discrimination. Sadly, so do many others. They deserve the law's protections, and they deserve civil rights too. Sexual disposition parallels race. I was born black. I had no choice. I could not and would not change it if I could. Like race, our sexuality isn't a preference. It is immutable, unchangeable, and the Constitution protects us all against
prejudice, and discrimination based on immutable differences. Many gays and lesbians worked side by side with me in the 1960s civil rights movement. Should I now tell them thanks for risking life and limb, helping me win my rights, but now they're excluded because of a condition of their birth, that they cannot share now in the victories they helped to win, that having accepted and embraced them as partners in a common struggle, I can now turn my back on them and deny them the rights they helped me win, that I enjoy because of them? Not a chance. Gays and lesbians worked side by side with me then. Just as you stood with me then, I am proud to stand with you now. In black America, homophobia spreads from our churches to our homes and our schools. Our inability to talk about sex, and more specifically homosexuality, is the single greatest barrier to the prevention of HIV transmission in our community. We have failed to heed Martin Luther King's warning, originally meant for others, but applicable to us now. He said then, nothing in the world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. But now the world is changing, and the law and people's attitudes will change with it. We can win in Maine. We can win in Washington State. We will end Don't Ask, Don't Tell, as the president promised last night. We can roll back the Defense of Marriage Act so all marriages are both defended and protected. We can pass an effective and inclusive hate crimes law, and we have a president who can and will sign it into law. We will end employment discrimination based on sexual orientation. We know that good things can come, and they don't come to those who wait, but they come to those who agitate.
And you're coming from Alaska.
You know Alaska, that's right.
That's a long way. I think that, I think you win the prize for longest distance travels.
Sore wings.
So what was the impetus for your coming here?
Well, we had the privilege of getting married in California about a year ago. And then when the vote turned it around, it just really brought us to the attention that this was something that was really great. It was a really important thing for the two of us, after we've been together for 27 years, to actually be able to celebrate this. And it's just wrong that other people don't get that privilege and that right.
Is this the first march you've been to here?
Yep.
Yeah.
We've been several times. And I was here in 87, and my affinity group was called Queer and Present Danger.
So how would you compare this one to the previous marches?
Well, this isn't as big as the 93, but the spirit is huge. And it's wonderful to see a lot of young people, okay, too.
I had already given up hope that in our lifetime we would have equal rights. During the Bush administration, it got very discouraging. And now I feel like I have optimism again, and it's really wonderful to feel like my heart is more open to our government, and that the government's heart is opening and softening toward us. I'm here because I believe in equality for all people, and I always have, and I was raised that way in Los Angeles in the 60s. And we started demonstrating for civil rights for African Americans when I was a kid. And so, you know, whoever needs the rights, I will be there for that person. And that's why I'm here today, and they happen to be for me. And I'll just say the thing my dad said at our wedding when we got married in 90, that was no legal significance, is that may the barriers against you and all minorities fall away, and may all the love you have for each other be reflected back to you.
Please put your hands together for acclaimed UK recording artist Billy Myers and Grammy Award nominee and out American saxophonist Dave Kahn.
I stand here as a very proud member of the LGBT community. I will not be defined by anybody else. I will not be silenced. I am bisexual, and I am proud of it. Now, I'm going to sing America the Beautiful. I want you to remember this when you sing today. This song was written by a lesbian who lived with her partner for 25 years. Dave.
Skies, for amber waves of gray, for purple mountains, majesty across the fruited plain.
You've been listening to coverage of the October 11th National Equality March in Washington, D.C., including just a few highlights from the four-hour post-march rally. You'll hear more in the coming weeks on This Way Out. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Jen Mahoney, Chris Wilson, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, and Christopher Gall contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is supported by voluntary program acquisition payments by our affiliate stations and through donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, hear our podcasts, read this week's news wrap, and subscribe to CDs of our programs. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening. I'm KRFC Fort Collins, Colorado, CJAM Windsor, Ontario, WRUW Cleveland, Ohio, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. For the 1,124th time, please stay tuned.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
There are places you go to get the quick news.
You know the kind. Those three-line summaries of world issues and events.
The celebrity gossip.
The intellectual junk food.
And then there's public radio.
You tune to KPFT each day because you need more than just the summary.
You need to hear the whole discussion to make informed decisions.
You need to understand the background, to understand the cultures, ideas, and history that touches our lives.
You want music from more than five corporations.
You need a choice.
And that's why you tune to community radio, because you have to know more.
People like you support KPFT to keep us on the air.
So visit KPFT.org today to become a member of this station.
This is listener-sponsored,
commercial-free,
Pacifica Radio,
KPFT, Houston.
Picture yourself driving home listening to a great story or a song or a discussion.
Suddenly, you find yourself parked, but rather than turn the radio off, you stay in your car to hear what you're listening to the end.
That's called a driveway moment.
A driveway moment?
Yes, it's that moment that you just can't get out of the car because what you're hearing is just that good.
Then hey, what better place to support KPFT?
KPFT features music, news, and talk that is so compelling people will do anything to hear the end of it. If you're in your car right now and have your cell phone with you, as soon as you pull in, give a call to our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314.
Give me that number again.
713-526-4000, extension 314. Speak to our membership department and become a member.
Your pledge of support helps keep this valuable resource on the air. This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacific.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.